Ms. Williams.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. Julia Williams on behalf of Dustin Dobbs. This case is about attorney's fees. The client in this case hired attorneys under a contingency basis, and during the course of the representation, the attorneys were terminated, and now we have a fee dispute. The trial court abused its discretion in awarding fees in this matter when there was nothing in the record to show that the fees were reasonable and justified. In the trial court, the attorney had the burden to demonstrate that the value of the services, to show that the services were reasonable and justified. The attorneys in this case failed to meet that burden because they failed to submit invoices, any affidavits, any time entries, a resume, a CV to show the court that the factors and elements under the quantum merit were considered. The skills of the attorney, there's no CV. The nature of the case. The trial court knew very little about the nature of the case because the case was actually pending in Ohio and was transferred to Illinois merely for the attorney's fees issue. The degree of responsibility, we don't know what the attorneys did in this case. We don't have an invoice. We don't have any information about their time or their labor or their fees, what a usual fee for this case in the community would look like and what the benefit was to the client. So the attorneys failed to submit that information in their briefing in the trial court, and the trial court could not have considered those very important factors that are consistently used in quantum merit cases, particularly here in Illinois.
I'm concerned, before we get to the merits, that we're here a little bit early. Your brief indicates that Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman issued a final judgment. She issued an order, and my concern is that order provided that there might be further proceedings concerning attorney's fees with respect to the Part B. I don't know if that's concluded or not, the enhancement provision.
The enhancements, a portion of the enhancements have been finalized, but not all of the enhancements were finalized. So I think your point is a jurisdictional point.
Yeah.
Do we have a second issue? The attorneys in this case have not sought those fees as to those issues and were actually terminated prior to that portion, the enhancements being submitted to the trial, to the MDL litigation settlement. So I don't believe that.
I thought the trial judge's order specifically reserved that issue.
The attorneys reserved and didn't argue that issue, so right. The Judge Coleman did reserve that issue. However, I would argue that this portion of the fees is ripe for this court to rule on because it's the portion of the settlement that's been determined. The order can be enforced right now as soon as Mr. Dobbs gets a check, the order can be enforced against him. So it's a final order as to the fees that have been, or excuse me, the award that's been determined.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, thank you, Your Honor. So in this case, the quantum merit, the court could not have determined all of the factors in the quantum merit because the attorneys have not met their burden. Because they didn't meet their burden, they shouldn't be awarded fees. The attorneys instead provided conclusory statements in their briefing without any affidavit, without any invoices, that they followed the case, that they communicated the terms of the settlement, that they discussed the settlement, followed case management orders. So rather broad, vague statements about what they did in the case, but no invoices, nothing about what's common in the community. A second reason why this court could reverse this case is the breach of the attorney-client agreement. In this case, there was some dispute between the parties about what the client agreement entailed. So there was the written agreement that Mr. Dobbs signed with Mr. Agreros and Mr. McLaughlin. And then prior to signing that, though, there was an email clarifying what that agreement would be. It was 35% plus costs and expenses. And the cost and expenses is the important part. The costs in Illinois under Rule 1.5C, you have to explain when those costs and fees will be paid, whether the client is going to be responsible for those fees either during the case, after the case settles, if they're going to be responsible even if the case is unfavorable to them. So under Rule 0.5, that's an important part and required to be part of the contract. In this case, Mr. Agreros had agreed to front the cost. So the litigation was pending, the settlement came in, Mr. Dobbs rejected the settlement and wanted to go to trial. The attorneys in this case repudiated the contract by stating they would not take the case to trial unless Mr. Dobbs would front the cost to go to trial. So because there was a repudiation of the contract, the attorneys cannot be awarded fees when they've repudiated the very contract that the fees are awarded under. Only after Mr. Dobbs terminated counsel and learned that he would be getting both the base settlement and enhancements did he accept that settlement. But that was after the contract was repudiated. So for that reason, again, the attorney should not be awarded fees. The third issue that we present in our brief is the breach of the fiduciary duty here. When attorneys breach their duty to the client, they're not entitled to fees. Now, on this issue, the client has the absolute right to accept a settlement or reject a settlement. And the attorneys in this case were attempting to get Mr. Dobbs to settle the case by basically threatening that they wouldn't take the case to trial. They were saying, you have to pay this exorbitant amount of fees, exorbitant amount of expenses in order to get this case to trial. We're not willing to front those costs. You really have to settle. Mr. Dobbs didn't want to settle. He went to seek other counsel. He could not, because the attorneys were maintaining a lien, stating that they had a lien, communicating to other parties that they would have a lien.
Where's the admissible evidence of that in the record?
So that is Mr. Dobbs, that is in the briefing. Mr.
Right.
Dobbs stated in the briefing. If you're looking for an email from alternative, that is not in the record, Your Honor.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the clarification. So Mr. Dobbs did attempt to get other counsel. He couldn't get other counsel. His only option here was to settle. So the attorneys breached their fiduciary duty when they strong-armed him into settlement. And then the fourth and final reason for that this court could reverse this decision is the violation of 1.5C. Now, 1.5C, as I discussed earlier, is the rule of ethics that states that you have to clearly notify the client of any expenses. Now, if that email is not part of this contract, then the client wasn't notified of expenses, and the client then the contract itself would violate 1.5. If it violates 1.5, the attorneys can't collect.
Can you address the equitable issue of Mr. Dobbs being able to take advantage of having claimed to be represented, getting a higher amount within the MDL settlement, and then keeping the money that for anybody else under the settlement would normally go to their lawyer?
Certainly, Your Honor. I want to clarify, kind of before I answer your question, I want to clarify the represented versus unrepresented issue, because that's certainly an issue. In the settlement, being represented versus unrepresented is a term of art, in the sense that someone is considered unrepresented if they don't have an attorney on a specific date. So if you get an attorney later, after that date, you're still unrepresented. If you terminate your attorney, you're represented. So in this case, Mr. Dobbs will be considered represented. So he's getting a higher amount regardless of what the court decides as to the fees. So to your point as to the equitable issue of shouldn't counsel be paid because he's getting a benefit, and for the reasons that the counsel is strong-arming the client into settlement, the potential violation of one, if the court rules that the contract doesn't include that email, the violation of 1.5, and then also for the breach of the agreement. The attorneys, when you breach an agreement, you don't get the benefit of that agreement. And so So for those reasons, when the attorneys don't act in the way they're supposed to under the agreement, then they don't get their fees. So Mr. Dobbs gets more in fees, but it's to make up for the fact that the attorneys didn't fulfill their terms. I realize I'm out of time, and
all right, thank
so
you,
I will conclude. Thank you.
Ms. McLaughlin?
May it please the court. This is about abuse of discretion at the court below. The appellant has made a number of arguments claiming, well, the court should have done this, should have done that, should have held hearings. But the court, in its opinion, where the court did award and find that the amount of fees requested was reasonable, the court stated the basis for it. The court didn't request us to provide any additional information, but one thing I'll point out to the court that really wasn't argued in the briefs is that, as I think the court's aware, this case arises out of the DePue ASR multi-district litigation settlement. That settlement involved something over 7,000 claimants. And the settlement agreement provided that people who never had a lawyer were to get a certain amount of money, and people who did have a lawyer were to get $250,000. Well, that certain amount of money was calculated by reducing the amount you get if you have a lawyer by making it 71%. Well, it turns out that the amount of fee that my now deceased co-counsel and I had in our contingent fee agreement with Mr. Dobbs is almost to the dollar the difference between what was agreed to by the settling parties as the amount that would be paid to representative versus non-representative attorneys. So we have some 5,000 people who were receiving essentially the exact same services that we provided to Mr. Dobbs. And those people who settled their case paid almost exactly the same fee that my co-counsel and I contend we are entitled to, if not under the contract, as the court here in Illinois found, we're entitled to on the basis of quantum merit. And so the fact that my years of trial experience, my curriculum vitae, the number of cases I've tried to verdict hasn't come into evidence, all right, we could go back and have a hearing and I can present all of that.
Well, that's the problem. That's what your opponent's asking for, that you do what you normally do in requesting fees, is put on your background, your qualities, the time you spent doing various things, and then award the fees, not just award fees out of
nothing. Well, the case law as cited in the brief says that one of the appropriate measures to determining, well, what is the appropriate amount of fee is to look at, well, what the contract would have provided if the contract were still in effect, rather than doing quantum merit. We're not claiming anything for any work done in receiving the enhanced fees. That's not an issue here.
Whether it's an issue or not here, are you claiming it? Are you reserving your right to come back again to say we should get more fees if he gets any enhancements?
I will here say no, I waive that.
Okay.
We didn't earn that. We didn't do anything to get the enhanced fees, but we did everything that was required to get the underlying fees. So the basis is that the court is to be given not just deference, but I believe it's highly deferential standard when considering whether or not the court below properly assessed the amount of attorney's fees.
And that's the sort of twist here, this wasn't before this judge. I mean, the case itself was not before this judge.
Well, the case was remanded to this court for purposes of determining the fees because of the conflict that arose when the MDL judge attempted the mediation, as was disclosed in the MDL judge's order, and that became unsuccessful. He felt he had a conflict. But the work that was done is apparent in the record, so I don't think, well, any any judge would need to see me personally.
If the work that you had done is in the record before this particular judge had made the decision, then that's, you're right.
I want to point out that two of the cases that the defense, the appellant argues, the Lavores case and the American Home Assurance case, are clearly distinguishable here. In Lavores versus Dick, the underlying reason why the court did not award a fee there was an illegal agreement between two attorneys, the previous attorney and the new attorney, that was not signed. It was just an oral agreement, and it appears that the underlying attorney was withholding the turning over of the file unless the subsequent attorney agreed to give him a 1/3 contingent fee. Clearly unethical, clearly illegal, and the court said, no, we're not going to allow the quantum merit fee under that circumstance. And in the American Assurance case, in that case, the attorney for the claimant tried to enforce an illegal contingent fee, which asked for an award and actually gave him assurances that he would get a fee that is in excess of the fees that were permitted under Illinois law in a medical malpractice case. Clearly overreaching, clearly illegal, and the court said because of that unethical conduct, that it would not award any fees because the attorney clearly acted unethically. Here, there is no evidence in this record and no finding by the court below that either I or my co-counsel did anything unethical. We didn't do anything illegal. We gave Mr. Dobbs the representation that he was entitled to and that he deserved. He was unhappy with the proposed settlement. Taking his case to trial, in our opinion, was going to be economically disastrous to him, even if successful, because of the expenses of taking the case to trial. We recommended settlement, and at that point, he decided to discharge us. I had found out my co-counsel had died. He died so suddenly, I didn't even know it. But I did everything that I could to continue to represent Mr. Dobbs. He terminated me, but then said, but continue to represent me until I find other counsel. You'll see from the emails that are in the record, I attempted to cooperate with the counsel that he did refer to me. I was then told, no, don't give him the file. Hold the file back. And I did that. I continued to do everything I needed to do until he finally filed the appropriate papers to have me withdraw. Even then, I wasn't allowed to just walk away. I had to go to a hearing, or I had to file papers. Didn't have to go to the hearing. And the court allowed me to withdraw as counsel, but then Mr. Dobbs accepted a settlement. Now, what isn't in the record is, what did he accept? We know what the settlement agreement provided about represented versus unrepresented, but we also know that under the terms of the settlement agreement, his date to accept it had passed. And we don't have in the record what deal he may have made about is he represented or is he not represented with the defendant in that settlement. But it's our understanding and belief that because we did properly register him and because we were his counsel throughout the time that he was a registered and not yet enrolled settlement claimant, that we did everything that was necessary and required to do to fully represent him. We earned the fee. And now if he can get an enhanced award, great. He doesn't owe any fees on that. I'm not going to claim any fees from an enhanced award. But we earned the fees just like every other claimant who participated in the settlement. And if Mr. Dobbs is getting the Part A award of $250,000, then the estate of Mr. Argueros and myself should be entitled to the fee that was originally provided for in the contingent agreement and was awarded by the court below based on quantum merit.
Do you have the authority to bind John Gelshausen, PC,
yes,
and Mr. Argueros' estate?
I don't have the authority to bind the estate, but I have the authority to bind my former law firm, John Gelshausen, PC. The estate, there is no attorney there. He was a solo practitioner. His widow is not a lawyer. I'm not the attorney for the estate. But I've not had any conflict with them, and you know, we have an agreement, and they've cooperated with me prosecuting this for them.
Thank you. Ms. Williams?
Your Honors, I would like to speak to one issue about the almost the same amount. The attorneys are stating that they're getting almost the same amount as what they would get, you know, the difference between what they're getting and what other attorneys are getting. In the unrepresented, they're getting at least 6% more and potentially more than that. So there is a difference between kind of what the settlement calls for is reasonable versus what these attorneys are getting. So I would let you, like, you know, advise the court of that and look at the amount that we're talking about here, because there is a slight difference there.
Is that why you're seeking the hearing? So there would be a reduction from 35%?
Well, I'm seeking... Yes, I'm seeking the hearing. I would ask that the court deny fees, but secondly, we would ask that be remanded for a hearing on the quantum Merowit issue, so the evidence can come in as to quantum Merowit. That would be our.
So, what did he settle for, though?
The settlement is the $250,000 that's shown in the record.
Okay.
That it's the same. There's no new settlement that was.
There's no enhanced figure.
So the way the settlement works, and I apologize, I'm out of time, but I want to explain to the court.
You can respond.
So the settlement was set up that, and everyone was offered the same settlement. So in my brief, I state that the settlement is akin to a class action settlement. They're individually settling, so unlike the class action, you have to opt in. But everyone was granted the base award of $250,000, and then there's deductions from there. Mr. Dobbs does not, the deductions do not apply. So there's the $250,000, and that's what we're discussing here, because counsel just waived the enhancements. And then there are the enhancements based on your age, the certain type of medical condition that you had. There are different ways that your $250,000 base could go up. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have to worry about those now. But he did get the $250,000 with no deductions. So we're talking about $250,000, and then there is a MDL fees. There's a 1% deduction from that to cover the fees of the MDL litigation. And there's also, if fees are not awarded to the McLaughlin attorneys, then there's a 5% attorney fee provision built into the settlement as well. So the $250,000 is $250,000 less 1% less 5%, and then that's where you get to the check that would be issued to Mr. Dobbs. Did I appropriately answer the question?
Just to be clear, so there's no, it's from $250,000 down, it's not from $250,000 up, you said?
It's $250,000 is the base.
Yeah.
And then the...
I understand the one and the
right, you understand five. The one and the five.
Well, but you talked about enhancements that Mr. Dobbs would be eligible for.
Right. So there's almost a second set of... You submit a second set of medical records, more information to the MDL settlement.
Is that occurring here?
That is occurring here, but the attorneys have waived any fees as to... any award that's awarded above and beyond $250,000.
I appreciate the position of Ms. McLaughlin. I just wanted to...
Yes, that's occurring here. It's not in the record because it hasn't been finalized. But Mr. Dobbs did file for enhancements and believes that he is going to get some of those enhancements. Are there any further?
Basically, your argument with quantum merit is that the judge that set the fees in this case is on appeal, that the counsel or former counsel did not provide documentation for what was done on their behalf and the quality.
Right, they didn't meet their burden of proof to demonstrate that the fees under the quantum merit. That's correct, Your Honor. Is there anything further, Your Honors?
Apparently not.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the fifth case, Smith versus Capital One Bank.